Timmy listened, adding in a few words here and there, but mostly he walked until they reached the water, and then he rowed. The ceramic oars dipped into the dark water and lifted out again. Eric drummed his fingertips against the stolen deck, anxious to reconnect it to the network, to see what was happening and what had changed in the time since they'd left the coffee bar. That being connected would somehow protect him was an illusion, and Eric half knew that, but only half. At the little island, Timmy pulled the boat onto shore and marched into the ruins where a light was burning. An old woman was sitting beside a chemical stove, stirring a small tin pot. The smell of brewing tea competed with the brine and the reek of decaying jellyfish. She looked up. Her face was like a mask, the makeup applied so perfectly it shoved her back into the uncanny valley.
"I found your tea," she said. "I hope you don't mind."
"Nope,"
Timmy said, not breaking stride.
"Come on, Eric, I'll get you set up."
They walked through a doorway without a door and into a small room. It was even less comfortable than the one with the old lady. There was nothing on the floor but the glue marks where there had once been carpeting. Mold grew up along one wall, black and branching like tree limbs. Timmy put the deck on the ground. His knuckles were black with blood and forming scab.
"You be able to get signal here?"
Timmy asked.
"Should be. May need to find a way to power up in the morning."
"Yeah, well, we'll come up with something. So this is your room, okay? Yours. That one's hers,"
Timmy said, pointing a thumb at the lighted doorway.
"Hers. She asks you in, you can go in. But she asks you to leave, you do it, right?"
"Of course, sure. Christ, Timmy. Your place, your rules, right?"
Eric smiled, hoping to coax one in response.
"We've always respected each other, right? Only, seriously, who is she? Is that your mom?"
It was like Timmy hadn't heard him.
"I'm gonna get some sleep, but come morning, I can go back in, get some food, and I'll check in with the man."
Eric felt his belly go cold.
"You're going to talk to Burton?"
"Sure, if I can find him,"
Timmy said.
"He's got the plan, right?"
"Right," Eric said. "Of course." He opened the deck, ran it through its startup options, and connected to the network. The signal strength wasn't great, but it wasn't awful. He'd been in half a dozen basement hack shacks with worse. He opened the news feed, still set to passive. The glow from the screen was the only light. Eric was cold, but he didn't complain. Timmy stood, stretched, considered the skinned knuckles of his hand with what could have been a distant sort of ruefulness, and turned to go back to the old woman and the light.
"Hey, we're friends, right?"
Eric said. Timmy turned back.
"Sure.
We've always watched out for each other. You and me."
Timmy shrugged.
"Not always, but when we could, sure.
Don't tell him where I am, okay?"
Security crackdowns, like plagues, had a natural progression, a peak and then decline. As terrible as they might be at their height, they did not last forever. Burton knew this, as did all of his lieutenants, and he made his plans accordingly. Burton moved through his safe houses, playing shell games with the security forces. The first night, while Eric and Lydia slept in their respective rooms in the little island ruin, and Timmy tried to find someone in the organization to report to, Burton slept in a loft above a warehouse with a woman named Edie. In the morning, he moved to the storage in the back of a medical clinic, locking the door and hijacking an untraceable connection so that he could speak to his people with relative safety. Little Cole had closed down her houses, locked away her reports, buried a month's supply of drugs, and taken a bus to Vermont to stay with her mother until things died down. Oestra was still in the city, moving from place to place in much the same fashion that Burton was. Ragman and Serrano were missing, but it was early enough that Burton wasn't concerned yet. At least they weren't in the news feeds. Liev and Simonson were. And there was other evidence, indirect but convincing, of where the little war stood. Even in the first morning after the catastrophe began, security teams were calling on Liev's underlings, sweeping them up for questioning. Some they held, others they released. Burton had no way of knowing which of those who had been set free had cut deals with security, and which had been lucky enough to slip through the net. It hardly mattered. That branch of the business had been compromised, and so it would die. The demand for illicit drugs, cheap goods, off-schedule medical procedures, and anonymous sex could be neither arrested nor sated. And so the thing that mattered most for Burton's little empire was safe. Would always be safe. The question of how to feed the city's subterranean hungers was only a tactical one, and Burton could be flexible. The temptation, of course, was to fight back, and in the following days, some did. Five soldiers from the Loca Griega left a bomb outside a Star Helix substation. It exploded, injuring two of the security contractors and damaging the building, and all five bombers were identified and taken into custody. Tamara Sludin, who really should have known better, organized street-level resistance, starting a two-day riot that ended with half of her people hospitalized or in custody, 18 local businesses looted or set afire, and the goodwill of her client base permanently damaged. Burton understood. He wasn't a man without passions. If someone hurt him, of course he wanted to hurt them back. Phrases like, "even the score," or "blood for blood," came to mind. And each time they did, he made the practice of tearing them apart to himself. Even the score was the metaphor of a game, and this wasn't a game. Blood for blood made it sound as if through more violence, past wrongs could be balanced, and they couldn't. The hardest lesson Burton had ever learned was to endure the blows, accept the damage, and let someone else strike back. Soon, very soon, the crackdown would shift from its great, overwhelming force to individual struggles. It was in his interests to see that those struggles were with the Loca Griega and Tamara Sludin, not with him. As soon as the enemy was clearly defined in the collective mind of Star Helix, and Burton's name and organization were not central to their plans, the storm would move on, and he could begin to reopen the folded fronds of his business. In the meantime, he moved from one place to the next. He told people he would go one place and then arrived at another. He considered all his habits with the uncompromising eye of a predator and killed the ones with flaws. Anything that connected him with the patterns of the past was a vulnerability, and wherever possible, he chose to be invulnerable. It wasn't the first time he'd been through this. He was good at it. And so when it took Timmy the better part of a week to find him, Burton's annoyance was balanced against a certain self-centered pride. The office was raw brick and mortar, news feeds playing on five different screens. A sliding wooden door stood half open, the futon where Burton had slept the night before half visible through it. Oestra, whose safe house it was, sat by the window looking down at the street. The automatic shotgun across his legs seemed unremarkable. Timmy had been searched by three guards on the street, and he'd been clean. Even if he'd swallowed a tracking device, they would have found it, and the big slab of human meat would have been bleeding out in a gutter instead of smiling amiably and gawking at the exposed ductwork.
Timmy, right?
Burton said, pretending uncertainty. Let the boy feel lucky he'd remembered that much.
Yeah, Chief. That's me.
The openness and amiability was annoying. Burton glanced toward Oestra, but the lieutenant was squinting at the brightness of the day. Burton scratched his leg idly, his fingernails hissing against the fabric of his pants.
You got something for me?
Timmy's face fell a little.
Just news. I mean, I didn't have any stuff, nothing to deliver or anything. All right, then,
Burton said.
What's the news, Tiny?
Timmy grinned at the irony of the nickname, then sobered and began his report. Burton leaned forward, drinking in all the words as fast as they spilled from Timmy's lips. When Oestra risked a glance back, it was like watching a bird singing away while a cat stood in the too-still pose of a carnivore waiting to pounce. The details came out in no particular order. Eric was in a safe place. Timmy had been taking food to him. The fake profile deal had been interrupted by the security crackdown. Eric's original deck was gone, but he had a replacement. The police probably had his DNA profile now. Oestra sighed to himself and looked back out the window. On the street, a half dozen young men who hadn't just condemned their friends to death slouched down the street together.
He's sure about that?
Burton asked.
Nah,
Timmy said.
We didn't hang around and watch them find the deck or anything. I figured it'd be better, you know, to get out.
I see.
Eric wanted to go get it. Grab the hardware, I mean.
That would have been a mistake,
Burton said.
If security had the deck and the man, that, well, that'd be bad.
Was what I thought, too,
Timmy said. Burton sat back, the leather of the chair creaking. Back past the bedroom, Sylvia started running the shower. Sylvia, or Sarah, something like that. One of Oestra's, provided with the bed.
Where's the safe house?
I'm not supposed to say,
Timmy said.
Not even to me?
The boy had the good sense to look uncomfortable.
Yeah, not to anyone. You know how it is.
Is there anyone there with him?
Yeah, I got a friend there.
A guard?
Not really, no. Just a friend.
Burton nodded, thinking hard.
But he's secure?
He's on the water. Anyone starts coming in, he's got a boat and about a dozen decent places to hide. I mean, nowhere's 100%.
And you're protecting him.
That's the job,
Timmy said, with a shrug and a smile. Burton couldn't quite put his finger on what it was about the boy that was so interesting. Over the years, he'd had hundreds just like him who came through, worked, disappeared, died, were fed to security, or found God, and a ticket out of town. Burton had a nose for talent, though, and there was something about this one that kept bringing him back to the sense of the boy's potential. Perhaps it was the casual logic he'd used when he'd killed Austin. Maybe it was the deadness in his eyes. Burton got up, raising a finger. Timmy sat deep in his chair like a trained dog receiving a command. Sylvia, whoever, was singing in the bathroom. The splash of water against porcelain covered the sound of Burton opening the gun safe, pulling out the pistol and its magazine. When he stepped back into the main room, Timmy hadn't so much as crossed his legs. Burton held the gun out.
You know what this is?
He asked.
It's a 10mm semi-auto,
Timmy said. He put his hand out halfway to it, and then looked up at Burton, his eyes asking permission. Burton nodded and smiled. Timmy took the gun.
You know guns?
Timmy shrugged.
They're around. It feels sticky.
It's got a resin of digestive enzymes,
Burton said.
Won't hurt your skin much, but it won't hold prints, and it breaks down any trace evidence. No DNA.
That's cool,
Timmy said, and started to hand it back. Burton tossed the magazine onto the boy's lap.
Those are plastic-tipped organ shredders, but they don't work on armor,
Burton said.
Still, step up from that homemade shotgun you've used, right?
Right.
You know how those things all go together?
Timmy weighed the pistol in one hand, the magazine in the other. He slid them together, checked the chamber, flicked the safety on and off. It wasn't the practiced action of a professional, but talented amateur was good enough for his purposes.